38, Joel Hirshhorn versus Auto Owners Insurance Company. Arguing on behalf of Auto Owners Insurance Company is Timothy Barber. Mr. Barber.
Thank you, Chief Justice. Good morning. May it please the court. This court should reverse the Court of Appeals decision for three separate and independent reasons. First, bat feces and urine unambiguously constitute solid and liquid irritants and contaminants that were released, discharged, and dispersed throughout the Hirshhorns' home within the meaning of Auto Owners' pollution exclusion. Second, the penetrating and offensive odor that the Hirshhorns allege emanated from the bat guano and which they allege rendered the home uninhabitable unambiguously constitutes a gaseous irritant and contaminant, and it's a fume that was released, discharged, dispersed, and which migrated throughout the home within the meaning of the pollution exclusion. And finally, bat feces and urine unambiguously constitute waste that was released and discharged and dispersed under the policy. If the court agrees with any one of these three reasons, the Court of Appeals decision must be reversed. Auto Owners asks this court to hold that damage to a home from bat guano and bat guano odor is unambiguously excluded under the terms of the pollution exclusion, and that the pollution exclusion is not limited to non-biological contaminants, and that is not limited to industrial waste.
Is it your position that this exclusion clause and the words you used or emphasized, irritant, gaseous, irritant, and waste, are unambiguous?
In this case, that's correct, yes.
In this case, but in some cases they might be ambiguous.
Well, I think the court in peace has at least held that the terms contaminants and irritants are not, by their nature, ambiguous per se. You know, there may be some ambiguity as applied to a particular set of facts, but by their very nature, they're not ambiguous in the policy.
We're interpreting an insurance policy, right?
Correct.
And what is our standard for interpreting an insurance policy? What standard do you want us to apply?
Well, I believe the general rule is that you, first of all, look to the plain meaning of the language. And if it's plain and unambiguous, you apply the language as it is. If the policy is ambiguous, which means if there's more than one reasonable interpretation. And I think that's the key here is that, you know, there's a lot of talk about the reasonable expectations of the insured, but the case law is clear that a reasonable insured cannot have an expectation of coverage when it's clearly excluded by the policy. And if both of the parties' interpretations are reasonable and it's ambiguous, then it's construed in favor of the insured.
So we never get to the reasonable person standard, the reasonable insured standard here.
No, I think the reasonable insured standard is relevant in determining whether the insured's interpretation of the policy is reasonable. You have to look at the insured's objective expectation based upon the plain language of the policy, the facts alleged in the complaint, and the context in which the loss arises. And I want to emphasize that it's an objective test. It's not subjective. It's not, as the Hirshhorn stated in their brief, what a property owner in northern Wisconsin would believe. It's what a reasonable person reading the policy language would believe.
Mr. Barber, is coverage contested here, or is it strictly the matter of whether or not an exclusion applies?
Coverage was initially contested at the circuit court. Auto Owners lost on that argument, and it has not been pursued on appeal. So for purposes of this appeal, the only issue is relating to the exclusion.
And is this the only exclusion that we're looking at, the pollutant exclusion?
Yes, for purposes of this appeal, that's correct.
All right, thank you.
The framework for analyzing this pollution exclusion was set forth by this court in Peace. And Peace is important for a number of reasons. First and most importantly, Peace expressly rejected the notion that the pollution exclusion is limited to industrial waste, as the Court of Appeals found here. The court in Peace traced the history of the pollution exclusion and noted that, yes, while initially back in 1960, when this thing was originally drafted, it was intended to cover industrial and environmental pollution. However, it had been amended twice, and that by 1985, the policy had omitted all references to toxicity and chemicals, and the court in Peace said, we find these undisputed changes inconsistent with the proposition that the clause was intended to apply solely to industrial pollution.
Well, when I read the briefs and I read the Court of Appeals decision, I thought that had that paragraph on industrial and biological not been put in the Court of Appeals, we wouldn't have this case. But that broadens an insurance company will think that broadens the exclusion or narrows
it. It shrinks the exclusion.
Sorry, shrinks it. And that would be difficult because it would cover a lot of cases. But, how many bad cases do we have? So can't be here just because you don't like the BAT decision.
No, I mean, the BAT guano is the particular facts of the case that the case came up upon. The bigger issue is how are we going to interpret this pollution exclusion?
Right.
Go ahead.
And the issue there really is whether it's limited to industrial, isn't it?
Right. And the cases across the country and even in the state have kind of taken two approaches. The one approach is to say, well, we know that this is very broad, but we're just going to limit it to traditional pollution or to the industrial type pollution that the insurance company originally meant. And then there's a second approach with this court, which this court adopted in Peace, which is to say we're going to apply the plain language of the policy, and this is a broad provision. We're going to apply it to the facts of the case, and there may be individual instances, such as in Donaldson, where it might be unreasonable to apply it, but that we are not going to limit it to a terms of art approach.
Counsel, I have in my mind that this case presents two questions. One kind of deals with the facts specific, and the second is the broader issue that was just being discussed, that is whether or not the exclusion is limited to industrial waste. Let's say this court, upon reading and rereading Peace, says, no, this exclusion is not limited just to industrial waste. That's question number two in my mind and in the briefs. But that still leaves us to address question number one, doesn't it? I mean, answering number two does not subsume number one. Number one is an independent question.
Right. Number two is part of number one.
But you can answer number two indicating that it's not limited to pollution. It's not limited to industrial waste, but still leave unanswered question number one. In other words, whether or not that excrement is covered under the words of this particular exclusion.
Right, and that really gets to the heart of it, which is what's the meaning of the terms contaminants and irritants?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really when it boils down to it, what this case is about. And what Peace and what some of the other Court of Appeals decisions, Richland and Lancashire Foods, have said, that the terms contaminant is unambiguous, it's broad, but the mere fact that it covers many substances doesn't mean it's ambiguous. And that what the term refers to is substances that are foreign or that don't belong in the insured property, that come in contact with the insured property and which render it unusable, which foul it, or which make it undesirable or unwholesome. And that's precisely what we have in this case. Both the solid BAT guano, and I also want to emphasize that the gas from the BAT guano, the penetrating and offensive odor, because that's what's specifically alleged in the complaint. Paragraph 9 of the complaint says it's the penetrating and offensive odor that caused the damage. And the Hirschhorns also stated that at page 13 of their response to the petition for review, stating it's undisputed that the penetrating and offensive odor caused the damage and made the home uninhabitable. And I think a penetrating and offensive odor, which is so bad that the person can no longer stand to live in the house, to be in the house, and has to demolish it, is clearly an irritant, and it's clearly a contaminant, and it falls within the meaning of the words gaseous and fumes. Now, the Hirschhorns have stated that, well, the policy doesn't list smells and odors. It doesn't need to because it's subsumed in gas and fumes. And there's three decisions from this court that have held the pollution exclusion applies to gases and or to smells and odors. First, Peace mentioned that dust from lead paint, that was a fume, that could qualify as a pollutant. Next, State Farm versus Acuity held that the smell of fuel oil that was released on the insured property and penetrated into the house was a pollutant. And finally, in Ace Baking, the court held that the odor of fabric softener that contaminated ice cream cones constituted a pollutant. So the policy does cover smells and odors under the heading, under the general terms gas and fumes.
Counsel, I reread paragraph 14 of the Court of Appeals opinion, and that goes to exactly what you're discussing right now, that is that portion of the exclusion which deals, which states pollutants means any solid, liquid, gases, or thermal irritant or contaminant, including smoke, vapor, soot, fumes, etc. And I want to focus on paragraph 14 of the Court of Appeals opinion and the Eustem Generis rule. And it says, focusing on waste. However, waste in its context here listed as an example of a pollutant would not unavoidably be interpreted as excrement. Substituting the terms makes this evident. And they go through the terms of the exclusion. Smoke, vapor, soot, fumes, acid, alkalis, chemicals, liquids, gases, and then they put in excrement. As the saying goes, one of these things is not like the others. And that seemed to me a little compelling. I mean, bat guano didn't seem to be the same as smoke, vapor, soot, fumes, acid, alkalis, etc.
Got three points that I want to make in response to that. Is one is that we don't get to the Eustem.
That's only one question.
I know.
Okay.
We don't get to the Eustem Generis rule unless the policy is ambiguous, and then we might use that to determine whether the insured's interpretation is reasonable. But if it's unambiguous, that doesn't apply. Second, even with that rule, each term in a list has to have its own separate and independent meaning. Otherwise, there'd be no point in having a list. And finally here, you know, when we talk about, and this is what I was critical of the Court of Appeals of saying in the quote that got the case here, is that poop does not pop into someone's mind. And, you know, when we interpret insurance contracts, it's not like the, you know, they reference Sesame Street here, and I'm going to say it's not like the game of Family Feud, where you mention a word and say, what's the top five survey results? And, oh, well, I didn't think of that, so therefore it's ambiguous. You have to look at the substance and hear bat guano and see if it has characteristics and has an effect that qualifies it as waste. And I think if you ask most people, is excrement waste, they would say yes, because we use the word waste water, which means water that's filled with excrement, feces, and urine. That's a common expression. So for those reasons, I disagree with that analysis by the Court of Appeals. Facially, it's appealing and it sounds good, but I think it's in contrary to how we interpret policies and it's contrary to what we normally mean by the term waste.
Following up then how we normally interpret policies, I look to the last sentence of the Court of Appeals opinion. And that last sentence really focuses on kind of how we normally would do something. That is, what a reasonable insured objectively would do. And that last sentence is, therefore, because a person might reasonably interpret the pollution exclusion as not contemplating bat guano, coverage is not excluded. That, too, seems at least facially tempting to me. I think an argument can be and is made by the Court of Appeals that a reasonable insured would not contemplate bat guano as part of the exclusion. Can you respond to that,
please? Yeah, a couple points on that. One, and this is where I referenced the Court of Appeals decision in Varda. That case didn't deal with pollutants. It dealt with a motorized land conveyance exclusion, and I think that case dealt with a lawnmower. The insured made the same exact argument in the case, that when you hear the term motorized land conveyance, you wouldn't normally think of a lawnmower. You think of cranes. You think of other vehicles that transport things. And the Court of Appeals applied what I think is the correct analysis. It says, look, this thing's got a motor. It conveys stuff, and it moves on land. It's motorized land conveyance. And that's the same way I think we need to interpret the policy here, that dictionary definition of waste includes excrement. And the reasonable expectation of the insured has to be based upon the policy language. And the cases in which this court and the Court of Appeals have found the provision to have more than one reasonable meaning or be ambiguous are entirely different from this case. Donaldson and Lagone, Donaldson was CO2, Lagone was carbon monoxide. Both of those cases dealt with substances that are usually in a house. You're expected to be there. You know, carbon dioxide was part of human respiration. It's natural, and there's some expectation of some small, minute levels of carbon monoxide. Both of those cases involve substances that are usually there and that through some unexpected accident accumulated to such an extent that they became a problem. That's completely different from what we have here and the other cases of where the pollution exclusion has applied, which is a substance that is foreign, a substance that is unwanted, a substance that in any condition would be undesirable. Which
what about mouse droppings? Let me use that word. You know, if that accumulates, oh gosh, you know, if mice would be in your wall and the excrement or the droppings accumulates, sounds to me like it's akin to bat in your wall and their excrement accumulating. It's not unexpected, especially if you live out in the country, to have a little mouse every once in a while in your house. And your argument is that what can be expected accumulates to an unreasonable amount, a la Donaldson, then there's coverage. The exclusion wouldn't apply. Can you pick up a mouse analogy, or is that not an apt analogy?
I think it is in the context of different animals. One, example of as a pet. You know, if a pet makes a mess in the house, is that a pollutant? Well, I think there are two things. One is that again you have to look at what's normally expected, and if it's something expected, then there's no coverage to begin with because insurance policies don't cover intended or expected losses. And second, with the example of the mouse, there may very well be a maintenance issue in that case. That being said, if you've got an infestation of mice that come in and that defecate to such an extent that the house can't be lived in anymore, I would agree that, yes, that's a pollutant under the policy, just like bat waste is. I don't think the fact that the waste comes from bats is what makes it a pollutant in this case, or what should be the deciding factor, whether it's bats, cats, mice, or some other animal that comes into the house that's not wanted, that's not supposed to be there, that's unhealthy for the people, and that discharges a pollutant which causes damage.
Counselor, there was a statement made by one of the people representing the insurance company that although the policy doesn't cover bat droppings, it would cover bats. What is it about bats that the policy would cover if you don't cover this kind of an occurrence?
First of all, that was the initial response by the initial claims adjuster, and I don't think the insurance companies are bound by the initial response of the claims adjuster. There was an argument made at the circuit court that bats constitute vermin, and so that other type of damage by bats would otherwise be excluded. Auto owners lost on that, and that argument hasn't been pursued up here on appeal. Mm-hmm. So, I don't believe that. Again, the fact that these are bats as opposed to some other animal makes a difference in terms of how we interpret this or how we apply it to this case, other than the extent that you don't want a bat in your house. You don't expect bats to be in your house. You don't expect bats to, drop feces and urine all over the house to such an extent you can't live in it. So to that extent, it is relevant, but not because it's a bat versus some other form of animal that's usually not in the house.
Okay, but I still don't understand. I didn't think I got an answer to my question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My question was, what coverage would you provide if bats are not excluded? I mean, I think that was the statement, that if there were bats in the house, there would be coverage, but we don't cover the bat droppings. So what I'm wondering is, what is it that you cover when there are bats in the house?
Well, the pollution exclusion has two triggers, has two elements that the Peace Court said, and it's based upon the language of the policies. One, you have to have a pollutant, and two, you have to have the element of it being discharged, released, and dispersed. So unless you have a bat, I can't imagine something other than feces or excrement or urine that's being discharged, released from the bat, then the pollution exclusion wouldn't come in here. I suppose you could have bats that fly into a I-beam or structure such that it damages the structural integrity. Quite honestly, I don't know if that'd be covered or not. It depends upon, what all these cases make clear is it depends upon what the facts are alleged in the complaint. And I think under your example, you don't even get to the pollution exclusion because you don't have a discharge or dispersal in any event.
Could I try to clarify that question? There is a provision here we do not cover loss resulting directly or indirectly from birds, vermin, rodents, insects. That's on page 27 of the appendix. But perhaps bats don't fall within any one of those words.
You know, and again, the argument was made at the circuit court that bats were vermin, and auto owners did lose on that. But the fact that a bat isn't listed in one exclusion, does that not mean a loss emanating from a bat is not within the scope of a different exclusion? That's why we have different exclusions. You can have, you know, three exclusions that don't apply to a loss. If one does, it's not covered. So, you know, again, the issue of whether the bat is a vermin isn't before this court, but I don't believe the fact that bats are not specifically listed in exclusion number 4F there is relevant to whether the pollution exclusion in 4H applies.
Now, the folks that come here today probably aren't expecting questions of this eloquence, nevertheless. It has to be discharged, released, or dispersed.
Yes.
I don't think of excrement, regardless of the source of the excrement, that it refers to those kinds of verbs. As I'm changing a baby.
She doesn't want to go there.
I don't want to go there. Hypothetically speaking, you know, I don't say as I'm changing the baby. I thought that's a safe example, too. As I'm changing the baby, I don't say, oh, look, this has been discharged, or this has been released, or this has been dispersed. Those are not words I usually associate with excrement. And that was one of the things I think the Court of Appeals picked up on also in terms of whether or not bat guano fits within the coverage. How can you, if you could respond to discharged, released, and dispersed, whether or not those are normally associated with excrement, which is part of your argument?
I think the court in Peace answered that, saying that those terms, all those action verbs, refer to pretty much the entire process by which, or any process by which a substance moves from a contained to an uncontained condition. And if you look at the dictionary definitions of all those words, they all involve movement from one state to another state. And the fact that colloquially maybe we wouldn't think of, you know, baby poop being discharged does not mean that under an insurance policy applying objective definitions that that's not covered. And here, you know, without, I mean, sounding crass here, but the bat excrement was discharged. It left the bats. It was deposited in the house. It was dispersed in the house. And likewise, the odor emanated from the bat guano. It dissolved, it diffused, it seeped into all the furnishings. So that definition is met. And the Hirshhorns have conceded that the bat guano was discharged and released throughout the house.
Counsel, I don't think that the maxim of construction is that it's an objective, necessarily, an objective definition. Rather, the maxim of construction is policy language is interpreted according to its plain and ordinary meaning as understood by a reasonable insured. That's, I think, the maxim. And I understand you saying objective is associated with it. But when I talk about plain and ordinary meaning, I get back to my point of I don't normally think of excrement being released or dispersed.
Well, you know, the cases recognize that this is a broad exclusion. It's intended to cover many things. And, you know, there are a number of cases that say if the term's not defined, you'll go look at the dictionary. And, you know, if you look at objective dictionary definitions, and the cases do say that the expectations of the insured have to be reasonable. It has to be objective based upon what a reasonable person reading the policy would say. And so to that extent, we look at the policy, we look at that definition, how it's been defined by cases, and given how Peace defined it and how other courts have, this scenario falls within those action verbs. And finally, I would note that the court does not need to get to the waste argument. That was the kind of the focus of the Court of Appeals opinion. But again, if the court finds that the urine and feces is a solid and liquid contaminant and irritant, it's excluded. If the court wants to focus on the odor being discharged and emanating from it, it's excluded. So while we certainly believe that waste is excluded, the court does not need to get there to rule in our favor.
Mr. Barber, if you were given the opportunity to write this opinion, give me an outline of the opinion, please.
I would say two things. I would say the specific holding is that in this case, that damage to a home caused by bat guano and bat guano odor is within the scope of the pollution exclusion and auto owner's policy. And second, more broadly addressing the bigger issue, I would say that the pollution exclusion is not limited to industrial pollution, and it is not limited to non-biological contaminants. And I don't think the court needs to establish a across-the-board bright-line rule to cover every pollution case, because what Peace recognized was that by its nature, it's broad, and so it has to be applied on a case-by-case basis. So there's those general principles I think the court should rearticulate in this case.
Well, I was looking not only for those two end results. I was looking for how you approach interpretation of the insurance policy. Because as I heard you, and I may have misheard you, that first you look to see if it's ambiguous. Then, if it's ambiguous, you look to see what a reasonable person would interpret it to mean. But as I heard Justice Bradley read from the standard, that's where you start. You start with what does a reasonable person interpret or read this clause to mean?
The cases, and the court's well aware, have kind of gone back and forth on those two standards. But I believe looking at all the general standards for interpreting insurance policies, the correct approach is to say we look at the reasonable expectations of the insured to determine whether that explanation or interpretation is a reasonable interpretation. If it is reasonable, then it's ambiguous. But an insured can't have an expectation of coverage that flies in the face of the policy language.
Why do we get to ambiguous the way you state the standard? You look at a reasonable expectation, that's an objective standard.
Right.
So if you say the reasonable expectation of the insured is it covers bat excrement, why do we get to ambiguous? That's it. The end.
Well, in this case in particular, because literally reading the policy, it's included. We have two interpretations here. We don't believe the Hirschhorn's interpretation is reasonable in light of the policy language. But the fact that an insured can come up with an arguable interpretation of the policy doesn't make it reasonable, doesn't make it ambiguous.
The one who decides whether what's a reasonable reading is the court.
That's correct.
All right. So the question then is, should a court read this clause, this exclusion clause, to include bat manure? Right?
Yes.
And you put that into the framework of what would a reasonable person reading the policy do. But, of course, most reasonable people don't read the policy until there's a problem, right?
Unfortunately, that's usually the case. But I see my time is up.
Okay. Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Joel Hirschhorn. Representing Joel and Evelyn Hirschhorn. You're still a member of the bar in good standing, Mr. Hirschhorn?
Since November 11th, 10th, 1967.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
And it's sad that it took me 43 years to get to the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
And right, sadder, on your own case.
It's my own case.
Right.
And I hear Abe Lincoln at my back. I'd like to introduce John Stommer, a young lawyer trying to find his way, who's sitting with me.
It's not so hard to get to Portage.
He woke up very early this morning to drive down from, I think he lives up in Tomahawk and shares office space with me in Rhinelander, and I'm trying to teach him some of my good habits and hopefully avoiding all of my bad. Context is what determines why we don't apply Justice Prosser's opinion in Peace. Clear. Lead paint, humans created lead paint. It's a chemical known for its toxicity. It was not a natural product, not a biological product. It's part of those chemicals and the alkalides that are caused or that produce industrial pollution. Last year, this court, speaking through Justice Bradley, authored Zarter. And Zarter is right on the money. Paragraph 26, the court's goal in construing an insurance policy is to determine and carry out the intentions of the parties. We interpret undefined words and phrases in an insurance policy as they would be understood by a reasonable insured, giving words and phrases their common and ordinary meaning. If words or phrases in a policy are susceptible to more than one reasonable construction, they are ambiguous. If an insurance policy is ambiguous in coverage, we construe the policy in favor of the insured. Because, this is paragraph 27, because the insurer is in a position to write its insurance contracts with the exact language it chooses, ambiguity in that language is construed in favor of an insured seeking coverage. I think perhaps the Chief Justice read my notes, because page 2 of my notes is no one reads insurance policies. We buy a house, we insure. We buy a car, we insure. We might read a little bit about our life insurance policies, but we don't read them until there's a problem. We trust insurance companies to be there to protect us. There's an element of good faith, which is precisely why, because we all know, although the law presumes you read what you sign, no one signs insurance contracts. You just pay the premium. That's the one thing that is clearly and unequivocally defined. The insurance premium is X number of dollars, and if you don't pay it, we will cancel. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. But when it comes to coverage, we need the rules the way they are, as announced over and over repeatedly and as re-announced clearly and unequivocally in Zarter. Exclusions are narrowly construed. Ambiguities favor the insured. What did the parties intend? What did the reasonable homeowner intend? You know, I live in Florida. I'm privileged to have had a home up in northern Wisconsin, Lake Tomahawk, since 1981. That's my getaway, get my head together, where no one used to know me until this case, unfortunately.
You'll be known as Batman.
Well, that's better than some... That's better than some things they said in my office. And Justice Bradley,
I withdraw my comment.
I have four grandchildren that I have diapered, so I understand. The District Court of Appeal got it right. I mean, I live in Florida. Mold and mildew is an issue. So you know what insurance companies do? They have a separate mold and mildew rider, and they limit their liability. Justice Prosser asked a good question. I don't see the word bats in there anywhere. And in fact, the insurance company couldn't get it straight. Claim was filed on October 23rd, actually filed before then, but the formal property loss notice, which is in the Court of Appeals appendix at page 168, was filed October 23rd, 2007. It took the insurance company all of 3 days, the arrogance of the insurance company without an inspection. It took them all of 3 days to write a letter saying, our policy does cover bats. This is appendix 162. However, we only cover claims that are sudden and accidental. Bats do not create an opening. They use what is available. When bats set up residence, this happens over a period of time and thus is not sudden and accidental. We do not cover claims involving maintenance.
Counsel, it seems to me that quite logically so, you placed a heavy emphasis on Donaldson in your briefs.
Yes.
And I'm interested to know, in light of that, what your response to opposing counsel's observation in regard to the carbon dioxide exhaled by humans in that sick building case is differentiated from the bat guano in this case.
Well, I mean, obviously I could not, in good conscience, say that my exhaling in this room is the same as a sudden, unexpected, unavoidable accumulation of bat guano.
Sure, but you're relying heavily on the principle.
The principle is that a reasonable insured is not put on notice for damages which cause injuries, which have in their genesis a normal biological process. The fact that in Donaldson it was a human biological process explains Donaldson. In this case, and perhaps the reason why this court took review, is to see if it extends to natural biological processes. Now, it's important for the court to understand, and I think counsel for auto owners has conceded, that this was not a negligent maintenance case. First, they denied coverage on the grounds of vermin. Oops, I learned in eighth grade, bats are mammals, not vermin. Then they said, we do have bat coverage, but you were negligent. The judge specifically found, when he first ruled, and even when he reversed himself, when Judge Magerson reversed himself, and by the way, he told me I appeared before him in a court-appointed murder case recently, and he said, well, whatever the Supreme Court does, I'm going to be right at least one of the two times. And I could not agree with him more, but I hope he's righter the first time.
Mr. Hirshhorn, as I'm sure you're well aware, one of the great environmental controversies in the state has to do with farms that are right along streams, cattle. The waste from cattle kind of seeps into bodies of water.
Yes.
Non-point source pollution.
Yes.
If you say that bat guano is not waste, when does droppings or excrement become waste within the policy?
Justice Prosser, what I'm saying is bat guano is not waste within the context of this policy, because the definition of the exclusion all relates to industrial waste, chemicals, and all fumes, alkalis. And so, yes, there...
So cattle waste wouldn't be included in this policy? I mean, wouldn't be excluded by this policy?
Within the...
Suppose somehow cattle waste polluted a well, or... I can't think of a really good example, but cattle waste is not going to be excluded here?
Within the context of a commercial farming policy, and I don't know that commercial farming or ranching policies have that same exclusion. I don't know. I know this is a homeowner's policy, and I know that it finds its way into industrial. I think that is a challenging question, and my answer to that is if the word waste means excrement, but we can't tell from this definition, then it might well be excluded. But I think someone who would complain that somehow cattle excrement somehow debilitated its water supply to the point where people got sick or its animals got sick, they could easily argue that waste within the context of this definition does not include excrement. Just add the word. All you have to do is add the word. I wasted an hour yesterday getting here because I wanted to, from my motel, because I wanted to make sure I knew where the court was. I still got lost getting here this morning. I mean, the word waste has many definitions, and that is the problem with the ambiguity argument.
But your response to Justice Prosser's question kind of invokes the Eustace Generous doctrine, but that presumes an ambiguity, and then that points up, right?
I mean,
but then that sort of sharpens the focus here between what in previous cases this court has described as a broad definition and distinguished that and made the distinction between a broad definition and an ambiguous one. And that seems to me to be sort of at the heart of this particular exclusion.
Well, I think if I had read this policy, if the insured, I hate to say I, you know, if the insured had read this policy before a claim and the insured had a Wisconsin Northwoods home that he properly and diligently maintained to avoid negligent maintenance, because that you can read and figure out, I don't think I would have figured that if a badger got into my house and defecated on my expensive or valuable Persian rug, which I don't have, that it would not be covered. I don't think I would think that the smell from a skunk that had somehow gotten into my house, even though it was locked and once a month maintained, and someone went there on a regular basis, as the record reflects, and the skunk panicked and discharged whatever it discharges that creates an odor. I don't think I would
But to be clear, it seems to me you're relying on the context in which the word waste is present in the exclusion, when it seems to me that the focus may have to more properly be on the term waste before we get to the question of what is the context in which it arises.
Well, I didn't read it that way. I don't think the Court of Appeals read it that way.
I know they didn't, because they accepted your doctrine and they applied it and they found a dictionary definition that bolstered the view of industrial waste and industrial discharge. But the question remains, I think.
And you know, it's because we have that question, and because there's seven justices, and because I've lost in the United States Supreme Court unanimously, and because I've seen 5-4 decisions, that's what makes it a debatable issue.
Right.
And that's why I suggest that if auto owners wants to properly, in good faith, protect insureds, it needs to be more specific, and the ambiguity that arises from that definition.
But do you agree at least that that's where, it seems to me, my reading of this seems to be that's where the focus really lies?
You know, I learned a long time ago that there's some questions that require candid answers. And while I agree that is a focus, I don't think it's the sole focus.
Sure, but it is a major one.
It is, and that's probably what brought us here. That and the unfortunate comment, poop doesn't come to mind, because I wish that were not in the opinion. And I mean that respectfully, but it's there, and we deal with it. Whether the ambiguity...
If the insurance company had an exclusion that said bats and any bat damage is excluded, you know, the insurance company doesn't know what other animal it's going to be. As you said, it could have been a skunk. It could have been a raccoon. Or raccoons, plural, or it could be squirrels who can do really serious damage when they get into the walls. And if they live there, they don't smell so good either. And yet the insurance company can't be expected to start naming every animal on the ground or in the zoo.
It names vermin, it could say mammals.
Pardon me?
It names vermin,
well,
it could say
mammals.
Well, you get
to mammals, you get to people.
Well... that's true. How about four-legged mammals?
So, I mean, we've had cases where you got mammals who are living in the house and do extensive damage that may or may not be covered under the policy. So how would you write this decision?
How would I write it?
Yeah. I mean, I know you want to win and you want it to come out that way, but obviously. But, I mean, how do you write it as a court to not only cover you, but to make an interpretation that is meaningful?
Well, one thing I would do is perhaps drop a footnote objecting to the Wisconsin Defense Counsel's argument in their non-party brief that the Court of Appeals decision had created a moral hazard. That was, in my professional judgment, not as the plaintiff, the appellee, but as a lawyer, an embarrassment. Any homeowner, any lawyer who seriously thinks a responsible homeowner would be morally disincentivized, would be disincentivized to maintain his home because of the District Court of Appeals decision, there's something wrong with our system if that is so. And there is a negligence maintenance exclusion that is crystal clear. How would I write this decision?
Yeah.
Insurance companies need to say what they mean so that the insured knows what to expect. And in homes in northern Wisconsin and elsewhere, where there is an environment that is conducive to protected species, bats, if they wish to exclude coverage for damage caused by bats, say so. That simple. As as the court pointed out in Hirshhorn in paragraph 7, whether the nuances and imprecision of general language equal whether the nuances and imprecision of general language equal ambiguity as a matter of law is a determination influenced by perception and perspective. A court must do its best to ascertain the objective expectations of the parties from the language in the policy. Who would buy an insurance policy to protect their home from a fire and not expect the insurance company to cover from the smoke damage? You can't tell me that the insurance company is going to rely on that pollution exclusion. You lock your house. You go away for a weekend, or in this instance, for a month or two. A fire occurs in the garage. Somehow, the smoke seeps through the attic in the garage into the house. Fortunately, the fire is put out. You come back. You open up your house. You're dismayed that there's a fire, but you walk in and you have that lingering smell of smoke. So you, what do? You contact your insurance company. They say, denied. Well, that's not what I bargained for. That's not what I thought I was getting by way of protection to my single most important asset in my life. The policy covers uninvited and uninspected intrusion provided there is no negligent maintenance. The policy, therefore, ought to be obliged to cover the natural probable biological consequences of bat guana accumulation and the orders from it. And let me put to rest, unfortunately, the record below is clearer than the way it was written in the briefs. The house was raised, as you can find in the appendix, because after the insurance company on October 26 said, forget it, you're not covered, a decision had to be made. This house, in the record below reported, cost $61,500 in 1981. And as we have pointed out in our briefs, the remediation expert could not guarantee a result, even after investing $25,000 to $40,000, and said the smell might still be there because, as the record below reflects, and it's in the appendix, the feces or the bat guana had penetrated wood studs and insulation. And even taking all that out, there was no assurance of the smell ever being gone. It's a simple economic decision. I'm not suggesting that the insurance company have to pay the entire cost of the raising of the house. The house was raised. The insurance company had an opportunity to inspect. It didn't. And now it complains. It doesn't even know what the accumulation of bat guano was. It just knows there was an accumulation. Does a reasonable homeowner really think that bat guano is pollution? Pollution to me are industrial smokestacks, a clear, pristine lake whose fish are killed because of runoff from an industrial plant. The pervasive. I mean, why doesn't they just put in smells? As opposed to, why don't they just put in fumes? To me, a fume is you're stuck in traffic and there's a diesel truck in front of you and your air conditioning is on, the windows are up, and you're getting the fumes of the diesel in your car. That's different than the odor or a smell. Would have been easy to have added. It's amazing.
Let me ask this. Suppose you had gone forward with an effort to remediate property, and all of the accumulated excretions were put together.
Yes.
We've got a bucket with all of the guano. Let's say the marshal over here is a DNR warden. Would you have taken that bucket and dumped it in the lake?
No. No. Why? Unless I wanted to do an intentional act. With all due respect, Justice Prosser, I'm not sure I understand.
Well, I mean,
and by the way, we did suggest early mediation. I'm not a dumbbell.
You did?
We did suggest early mediation.
Yes.
I'm not a dumbbell. Mm-hmm. I've tried 400 jury trials in my career. 150 appeals. It's the only second one is appellee.
No, no, you're saying mediation?
Oh, I thought you said.
No, remediation.
Oh, I apologize. Yes, I'm
yes,
sorry.
I said yes, remediation.
Right. So if we had tried remediation, yes.
What I'm really getting at is, wouldn't you have considered that bucket of accumulated guano, whatever the word is, a contaminant?
Now, I would not have dumped it in the lake. I would have spread it on my lawn. And then instead of having clover, I might have green grass.
And no company.
And no company. Well, I'd have the summer, spring, winter, but you know what they say about Wisconsin, two seasons, winter and July 4th.
Good answer.
You know, I have to wonder, under this policy, if there were a backed up sewer or backed up septic system and it bubbled up through the toilet on the third floor, and you were away from your home, I don't mean you, the reasonable insurer was away from his or her home for 2 or 3 weeks and comes home and discovers what can only be a mess, whether the insurance company would hide behind, oops, that's waste, sorry, excluded. Do you think that's what the reasonable insured would think he or she had bargained for, they had bargained for?
Mr. Hirshhorn, in your brief, you do spend some time talking about the distinction between the accumulation of the guano and the other terms that are in there. And I'd like to give you the opportunity to kind of discuss that in a little more detail, what the distinction you're making is and why it's important.
I'm not sure what you say.
Well, you say, at page 12, you say, the damage at issue in this case was not caused by the discharge, release, escape, right, and the like, that's in paragraph 10, of bat guano or the odor emanating therefrom throughout the, or the odor emanating, okay, therefrom throughout the home, but rather by the accumulation. Now that does seem to be facially at odds with what the factual record discloses.
I think we might have misstated the position slightly, but it's consistent with the question that was asked by, I think, Justice Bradley with mice. And the droppings from mice, which occur on a regular basis in practically every person's home, but certainly up in northern Wisconsin. So if there had been an invasion of bats, if the invasion had not occurred in the sometime after May when the house was inspected, I'm going to answer your question this way. The house was inspected and it was listed for sale with the broker who had to certify there were no hidden defects or no known defects. And between that time in May and in July, when he came back and first noticed the dropping, sometime between May and July is when bats roosted. And apparently, unbeknownst to me, two things. One is that bats give birth to their young in the summer, and they're incapable of flying until August. Second thing that wasn't known to me, but we've argued it, it's in the record. The second thing, it's in the record. There's something that is not known, and that was not known to me, is that certain species of bats are protected by federal or state law. You can't just go in there, rip off the siding, and get them all away, put the siding back up. Then you violated the law. So you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, the conundrum. And so you...
Is that what the situation is here? My reading of the record indicated that there was not the decision, that there was not a point where you were weighing, or the homeowner was weighing the opportunity whether to rip off the side.
Oh no, it's in the record. We had the record will reflect that there was siding ripped off, it was
right,
discovered, and a remediation.
Right, but that would have been after the damage. I'm really just trying to get at your distinction between the accumulation and the odor.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that without the accumulation, obviously there would have been no odor. One bat, two bats that are there for a night or two and defecate and urinate will not create an accumulation sufficient to give rise to an odor. That's my point.
Counsel, in response to Justice Prosser's question regarding non-point source pollution, something that, as he described, you know, you have farms oftentimes have an issue with non-point source pollution, and the issue is dealing with excrement oftentimes. Not always, but oftentimes. You seem to be taking the position that a pollutant has to be an industrial pollutant. I know of pollutants that are non-source point pollutants that aren't industrial. Let's say excrement goes into a stream and pollutes a stream, or a well, I guess, would be a better example. Looking at the policy language, would that be covered or not covered?
I don't see where excrement's included in the policy, one. And two, I need to know the context, because that's what is this a well that services a home? Is this a well that is a commercial-type facility? And how did the excrement get there? Was it as a result of negligence? Was it because somebody dumped the excrement in there? Was it because of a failure to fence off the area? That's when the negligent maintenance issues kick in to protect the insurance company. So
I was looking more at the language discharge, release, escape, seepage, migration, or dispersal.
That, it seems to me, if you're talking only within the context of, if there's a field a half a mile away where cows are penned or
fertilizer too, I suppose.
Or fertilizers, and because of heavy rains or whatever it is, it manages to seep down and migrate into the well, then I think there could well be a pollution exclusion under those circumstances. Mm-hmm. And I could understand the insurance company saying that. That's not what we have here, because we have, the reasonable insured has no reason to believe that his house won't be protected from, unless he's negligent, from an sudden and unexpected intrusion. I think that if you're going to fertilize a field half a mile from a well, maybe the farmer's on notice that there could well be in heavy rains, a washdown and seepage, depending on a whole bunch of things, including the aquifer, stuff that I don't know anything about. I just happen to know that word.
I like it.
So
I was wondering if the language used here is the same that's used in other policies that we've had that deal with pollutants, mm-hmm. which are usually commercial policies of one sort or another. This is a homeowner's policy. Yes. And I didn't look it up, but we can, as to whether this is standard pollutant language in homeowners versus standard language in non-homeowners.
A very important point. In ACE, that was the baker who himself stored industrial chemicals, Liverpool, a fabric softener, in close proximity to his baking goods. Same language. I think what's happened is that insurance companies, this auto owners, has not adopted or adapted to the homeowner's insurance policy, and has just simply engrafted the language of the industrial or commercial policies. I think in Justice Process decision in Peace, he referenced the fact that the pollution exclusion referenced environmental terms in paragraph 66 of the opinion, and that was the same policy as we have here. And I know it was an interesting split, including your dissent and your dissent, Justice Crooks. In Richland, which the insurance company relies on, is a contamination case where improper welding created a chemical reaction. That can't possibly be the same as what we have here by a sudden and unexpected invasion of bats. So the essence of the exclusion is, I think, reasonably and fairly construed to mean industrial, for sure. But I don't think a consumer, homeowner, would necessarily see that as applying to his or her home. And to that extent, there is an ambiguity which ought to be resolved against the insurance company. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Barber, 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you. I just have a couple points I want to make, and then I also want to answer Chief Justice's question about how to outline the policy. One here, and it's a theme throughout the Hirschhorn's brief, is that, you know, this is not a subjective standard. It's not what an individual person would want or an individual person would expect. It's what a reasonable person reading the policy language would expect. You know, and to say that, well, wait, you know, excrement's not the first thing you would think of when you hear the word waste. You know, we talked about mammals here. Well, when I say mammal, is the first thing you think of a zebra? No. But you look at the zebra, okay, is it warm-blooded? Does it care for its young? I guess it's a mammal. It's the same type of analysis here. You look at the specific substance, does it meet the definition? And it does. The Hirschhorn's want the court to just ignore the policy language and just say, well, reasonable people don't think this is what is covered, so it shouldn't be covered. You know, the court in Peace, dealing with the lead paint, in that case, the lead paint flakes or chips was not specifically listed in the policy. And the court in Peace even said, look, insurance companies don't have to list everything, otherwise policies would read like federal procurement manuals. And so to say that the policy has to list bats, cats, rice, mice, rodents, and all these other things, that's not reasonable, and that's not what the court has required.
Mr. Barber, what do you think of counsel's argument regarding smoke or regarding sewage backup?
Well, certainly I think that you know, smoke is specifically listed in there. If smoke comes, and again, I think this, you need to apply this principle here. Is it something normally in the house? Is it something not normally in the house? I think if you have a fire at a farmer's field and smoke comes in the house across the way and the house just reeks like smoke and you can't do anything about it, yes, that's a pollutant. I believe with human excrement, I believe that was an issue in Gunther, which was Justice Rogensack's opinion at the Court of Appeals. And there the court said that, yeah, excrement is waste. In that case, the problem was a lot of the damage was caused by the water as opposed to the waste. But in general, yes. And, you know, the Hirschhorn's even admit at page 35 of their response brief that a reasonable insured would understand human excrement to be waste. Why do we make a distinction between human excrement versus animal excrement? The fact of the matter is you look and see, is this a foreign substance? Is it a substance that's not wanted in the house, that's not expected to be there? Does it contaminate the house? Does it make it unlivable? Yes. And that is the way I would like the court, the outline of the opinion, is to follow Peace and the two conditions. One is, do we have a discharge, release, and dispersal? Yes. Two, do we have a contaminant and irritant? Yes, and as I outlined before, there's three reasons why we have a contaminant and irritant. And again, broad does not equal ambiguous. You know, the court in Lancashire Foods was very clear about that, said, yes, a lot of substances can be contaminants, but that term is not ambiguous. And that same principle should be applied in this case. And, you know, when we interpret these policies, courts construe them. Courts put, a spin on certain words, and reasonable insureds are expected to know what that is and expected to know what the case law standards are. So it's not a subjective deal here. And I believe that's all I have. I will end
Any
early, which is probably unusual. Thank you.
Mr. Barber, thank you. Mr. Hirschhorn, thank you. I want to thank you both for yet another case interpreting an insurance policy, although in a very different kind of fact situation. As the court knows and counsel know, the most frequent contract that anyone engages in is insurance law, and here we interpret and apply a particular contract. So concludes 09AP 2768, Joel Hirschhorn versus Auto Owners Insurance Company.